I'm Rebecca Blacksmith, your host, and we're talking with CEOs from across the D.C. area each week on the Leader Spot. Executive leaders speak to us about their stories, what it takes to build a business, what it takes to lead a company, what it takes to rearrange employees or make tough decisions. Joining us now in studio, the founder and chairman of Omniplex World Services Corporation, Julianne Patterson. Omniplex is a top 100 minority-owned firm in the United States, which delivers professional intelligence support services and investigative and physical security services. Welcome, Julianne, to the Leader Spot.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate it. Now, your company is a private company based in Virginia with annual revenues of over $100 million. And what are you currently doing?
Well, currently, our revenues are projected at around $115 million. And we're basically offering those services under the umbrella of Omniplex. They're two separate companies with support structure and centralized services to each. And both are doing amazingly well in this economy.
And explain those two separate companies under the auspice of Omniplex.
Oh, good. One of those companies is focused on investigations. We have about 2,700 credentialed federal investigators that can literally knock on any door in the United States and its territories within 3 hours with a credentialed investigator. These are the background investigations that are the basis for the granting of clearances, top secret clearances, with various government agencies and those components of the intelligence community. The other company is focused on providing security services and some logistics support. The security services range from those blue blazer men and women that you've seen at some of the DOD contractor buildings here in the Washington, D.C. area and the outlying areas, and they range all the way up to some very special people who have night vision goggles and all-terrain vehicles and two-minute response times. Huh. And we're very proud of those men and women and the great things they do to support this nation's security posture.
So your clients are the government and businesses, both?
Our clients are primarily the federal government, those components within the intelligence community, certainly several of the Fortune 500 companies. But to focus on your question, about 98% of our people have a security clearance.
Wow. Now, and you founded this company yourself in 1990. We're speaking with the founder and chairman of Omniplex World Services Corporation. As I said, it's grown over $100 million in revenues. How did you know your company was going to work?
Well, you know, I didn't. In fact, you know, as I just scratched my head for a moment, there were the days of working for the agency, a place I'm very proud to say I was associated with, a wonderful group of men and women who worked very hard. And I had an opportunity. I was doing some things overseas in terms of training, and I recognized that that had a commercial application. And I also recognized that I could better provide an innovative approach to the federal government if I were in a commercial setting. And so I left the federal government after giving a year's notice to make sure that I would have no problems coming back in case I fell flat on my face. But I did go out and I fell flat on my face. And I suffered from what so many leaders do, and that's ego. When you have an ego problem, you won't go to people who are trying to be helpful. You won't see things other than the way you have envisioned them. But I was fortunate that a number of people were very kind to me and patient with me along the way, and that allowed me to get my footing and move forward.
What was the hardest thing about, you know, you said you'd serve with the CIA, and that was for 10 years. What was the hardest thing about then doing it yourself and being fully responsible?
Well, I must say that during my time with the agency, what I developed was a sense of having a clarity of vision and being resourced and doing things the right way. That was kind of my takeaway from there. And as I tried to apply those in a commercial setting, what I found was that those things were important, but I didn't really know a lot about business. I found about 1,200 acres of land out near Front Royal, Virginia, and I was going to develop a training center for primarily government customers. Unfortunately, in taking out all of those monies I paid into the retirement fund there with the federal government and coming out, I really didn't understand the best approach for doing that and found myself very quickly with a chicken and egg. Some entrepreneurs have done that before, so I'm sure they'll chuckle about that. But mine was a situation of having banks who say, we'll lend to you when you bring us the contracts. And I had various federal agencies who said, we'll contract with you as soon as you build the facility. And I couldn't solve that dilemma. And so for me in that day and time, that meant that I sold my house and moved into my office to pursue my dream. As I went on trying to pursue that, I didn't have a lot of revenues. And eventually the landlord for that facility said, you've got to move. I'd gotten 8 months behind in the rent, and I was actually sleeping in my office space, which was a converted warehouse space here in Redskins Park. Interestingly, through what I feel is divine providence, our headquarters today is about a half mile away from the office building that I used to sleep in day and night.
And your office now is probably bigger than your old bedroom at your old office.
It is much larger, and I'll tell you, a lot more comfortable. But it is... it's not so much a matter of pride as it is it's soul-soothing to know that somehow through, again, what I feel is a divine providence and certainly understanding my role in that regard, which is to be purpose and to bring values to bear in doing that, we've just been blessed. And so today there are, as I mentioned, 2,700 people in one company and about 1,500 people in the other. And those two companies are very, very successful.
Did you start both companies at one? I mean, as they grew, did you? At what point did you kind of say
actually,
two?
You know, that's an interesting question because I actually started the company focused on providing services to DOD contractors. Our very first contract was out in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and today that's pretty much the dollar bill behind the cash register. We're proud to say that that's still a client of ours. We started mm-hmm. with them as Magnavox, and they became the Carlisle Group, and then they became Phillips Electronics and Hughes and Raytheon. And so today they're still the same client.
Wow.
And we're very pleased to have them. But we started with a focus on security officer services. We saw an opportunity to provide the investigative service. It was a unique moment in time. We seized the moment. We responded in a dynamic way. And the federal government recognized that and, in fact, gave us an award for having the best proposal they had ever seen.
Wow. Yeah. Congratulations. You have that on your wall?
We do.
Excellent. That's pretty good. Now, I wanted to get into a little bit about you served with the CIA for 10 years and you left in 1997. And then you went on to form Omniplex World Services Corporation. When you're with the CIA, you're operating in a secretive business context. And now, as a business professional, it's almost like you give your card out to everybody. You want everyone to email you because they could be a potential client. So how did you as a leader adjust to those two different cultural environments?
You're right to say those are two different worlds. I think they become one when you focus on the fact that you're looking for the very best people. You're looking for people who are disciplined. You're looking to entrust those people to fulfill the task as long as you resource them sufficiently. So the transition, although on its surface may look a bit challenging, as I proceeded down that road, it turned out to be a lot easier than I had expected. And so much of what I learned there and the people I saw there, I think has played into the company that you and others see today. It's been very much a part of our success.
We were talking to Bob Murphy about MRP Realty, and he was saying how part of his philosophy is building a good team. And you're kind of mentioning that, too, with your time at the CIA. Did you learn to do that quickly when you went out on your own?
You do. And it's something that you come to a reality of very quickly. Once you start to truly understand what you're trying to accomplish and you understand what the resources are that are necessary, you have to move forward by investing in people. There's a Chinese proverb that says that if your vision is for a year, plant wheat. If your vision is for 10 years, plant a tree. But if your vision is for a lifetime, plant people. And what that means in translation is invest in people. Invest in those relationships. So today when I speak to our team, or if I'm blessed and fortunate to speak to groups of businesses, as I am from time to time, I tell them that business success is based on three things. It's based on having a real vision about what you're going to try to accomplish. It's based on having a viable plan. And then it's based, most of all, on building relationships. You're building relationships with people who believe in you, and they have no interest in getting anything from you. It's not as if they're going to get some repayment in terms of dollars and cents, that you're going to offer some influence or open a door. They're interested in seeing you be successful. And those are the people you want to have relationships with.
And so you learn to get rid of the bad relationships that want beyond that?
Exactly. And to focus on those people who have good intent.
Excellent. Excellent. Is that, would you say that's your leadership philosophy?
My leadership philosophy is essentially encapsulated in those three items. And then if I have anything to wrap around that, it's our corporate motto, which is right people with right values. And what that means is not that we walk on water by any means, but it means that it's not enough to have the right credentials and background and education. You have to be a person of integrity and honesty and character in order to be a part of a team that's going to succeed to that vision.
Well, appreciate all those philosophies. And I want to continue talking about our right people, right values when we come back from the break here on the Leader Spot. We're speaking with the founder and chairman of Omniplex World Services Corporation, Julian Patterson. I'm your host, Rebecca Blacksmith. We'll return and continue this conversation.
Thanks to this sponsor of the Leader Spot, the Hilton Garden Inn Fairfax Hotel, just minutes from I-66 and 50, provides business meeting and banquet rooms for up to 300 guests with a professional staff that stays focused on the details so you don't have to. The latest in audiovisual equipment and technology, as well as full banquet catering for all tastes and meeting budgets. Visit our website today, theleaderspot.com, and click on Hilton Garden Inn Fairfax for a meeting room discount for your next business meeting. Hilton Garden Inn Fairfax, everything for business, right where you need it.
You're listening to The Leader Spot. It's a podcast on theleaderspot.com. I'm your host, Rebecca Blacksmith, here with the founder and CEO of Omniplex World Services Corporation, Julian Patterson. Julian's back here with us in the Leader Spot studio. Julian, before the break, we were talking about your mission of right people, right values. When did you come up with that mission? Since inception?
Well, no, not really. I'll tell you that really was a part of that entrepreneurial struggle that is so familiar to many. For me, it was a situation of going from a place of prominence and working for the agency and heading some teams overseas and coming out and trying to be entrepreneurial and then having to move into my office, living off of credit cards and having a time where no bank would even let me walk into the door. And that humbling experience caused me to see things clearly. And I started to understand even more that character, honesty, and integrity are key to any successful effort. And so as the company then started to actually take root and sprout and evolve, it made sense to me as we drew management together and talked with them and tried to focus on some clarity of vision and mission and our value statement, it made sense then to make sure that right people, right values was at the core of everything that we did. What that does is it allows everyone on every level to hold each other accountable. It allows the receptionist or someone on the line level to come to me and say, what you did wasn't honest. What you did showed poor character. You have no integrity. And they're not talking so much about me as in terms of a put down as they are, here's what you did.
Have you had that happen?
No, fortunately.
Okay.
Because when you start to set high standards, you have to be very careful. Everybody will hold you accountable, your friends, your enemies, and everyone in between. So when you raise the mantle, you have to be very, very careful to make sure that you do the right thing each day.
Now, speaking of doing the right thing, that led you, and I'm sure that's one of the variables, that led you to be named the Greater Washington Entrepreneur of the Year Award in 1997. You were selected out of 890 nominees. So apart from doing the right thing or character, what are some of the non-negotiable qualities that you think are key to being an entrepreneur?
Well, I think an entrepreneur has to be, in my opinion, a servant entrepreneur. This is a day and time where people have choices. And people with skill sets move quickly through the marketplace, assessing where their time is best spent. And so as you cast your vision and your mission and you start to explain your plan for the future, people will draw near. Those people who have those vitally needed skills and abilities and insights, they will draw near if you are a person of character and if you yourself have your sleeves rolled back and you're involved on a daily basis. Nobody wants to work for someone who is down the hall that you never see. And so a servant leader is one who purposes him or herself to get out there and to do it and show how it's done. And he or she does that on a daily basis. And people like to follow an individual who is involved with doing it when they are. And that way, if there's a failure or if there's a disappointment, you know it and you understand it well. And then when there's a triumph and a goal that's been obtained, you're a part of that too. And that's where the basis for it's overused, I think, too many times, but that's where the basis for a family-like, company-oriented sort of group is formed. It's because we have like issues that we value, we've faced challenges together, and we've won victories together. So a servant leader, I think, is a must.
Excellent, excellent. Now, we're speaking with the founder and CEO of Omniplex World Services Corporation, Julian Patterson. And as you know, this is a tough business climate to operate in. How is that affecting your business, and how do you make different changes as a result of that?
Well, I'll tell you, I still believe that a poet by the name of Michael Drayton said back in the 1600s, he said that Virginia is Earth's only paradise. And as much as Virginia can be a paradise in reality today, I think that it's one of the few places where all the stars still line up for an entrepreneur or a corporation looking to move its business to Virginia. When you look beyond the real estate fiasco and certainly the oil crisis and our nasty transportation issues that are particular here to Virginia, Virginia, at the end of the day, is still a place where the business costs are 9% below the national average. And the corporate income tax rate of 6% hasn't changed in the last 30 years. Our AAA bond rating keeps borrowing costs down to an affordable level. And our workman's comp is the fourth lowest in the nation. We're actually 47% below the national average. So when you put all those things together, you look at the recognition of Forbes, as you may be aware, recognized us for the third year in a row as the best place in the nation to do business. We've been recognized as the best place to educate a child. If you're going to be successful, this is the place to do it. And then there are some things that are particular about Fairfax County that Fairfax County Economic Development Authority there, Jerry Gordon and his team, can highlight. But there are things like the education of the workforce, their training, their certifications, and then there's clearances. For us in particular, it's access to political leaders and proximity to federal customers. All these things say that not only Virginia is a great place to do business, but Fairfax in particular for our type of business is the perfect place.
You're like a publicist for Virginia.
Well, what else could I say? I just stepped down as the chair for the Virginia State Chamber, which was a terrific honor. It was a place where I did my best, but it's easy to look good because they've got a wonderful staff and a great president down in out of Richmond. His name is Hugh Keogh, who just do the same great job time after time.
Speaking of community, one of the things that I noticed was I was reading over your charitable affiliations and kind of what you do for, you know, in terms of giving back to the community. And it's something we talk about here on the show of leadership and kind mm-hmm. of a leader is all encompassing. I call it the panoptic leader, where they serve their community, the world, their colleagues, and their corporate, their business. And I noticed a theme across a number of them. You were a board member of the Prison Fellowship Ministry Foundation Board. You were vice president of the Friends of Fairfax Juvenile Court and the Good News Jail and Prison Ministry. And since this the at-risk youth issue is a topic of research for me for my PhD, mm-hmm. I noticed that out of all the charities. So there are two things that came out of this. One, I sensed a faith commitment that was a component of your leadership, and two, that you're concerned with the area of corrections. So talk to me about that and who you are as a leader.
Well, first and foremost, as much as we have pride in ourselves, I don't think any of us are perfect. I think all of us have done something at some point in our life that we're ashamed of. I think that we've all made mistakes. And so I think that there has to be some vehicle, some basis upon which we're allowed to get our footing again, some way to get from here back to where we should be. And so I think that a lot of the faith-based initiatives that manifest themselves in activities of missions and ministries and churches, and then just good companies. I think all these things are important in a world where more and more temptation lurks, and it's harder to succeed. Secondly, I think that a leader has to have a basis for his or her principles. It's not enough just to say, I believe this or I believe that. So whether you're close to your faith or not, there needs to be a standard by which, a benchmark by which you operate, that others can step back and look at and say, you know, he or she's been consistent with that, and I understand what I can expect from them. So in my case, and for the people who work for our company is not a church. But what we essentially say in our value statement is that the Bible, which sets forth Judeo-Christian principles, is the basis for our understanding of right and wrong and good and evil. Now, we have a variety of people who work for our company. Some are close to their faith. Others have no faith. Some may be Jews, and others may be Muslim and the like. But at the end of the day, what everybody likes about that value statement is it means that we really are going to do unto others the way we would like them to do unto us. And we do really want to treat people as neighbors. So regardless to whether you feel the Bible is a book of faith, or if you feel it's an interesting reference, at the end of the day, what you want is a standard by which to judge right and wrong and good and evil. And for us, that's the standard.
Excellent, excellent. And another area of passion that you have is you were the keynote for a White House initiative on historically black colleges and universities. And here's what you said. You said the winning formula is having a clear vision about what you want to accomplish, having a real plan as to how to achieve it, and building valuable relations with the people who believe in you and in what you're trying to do. And you mentioned that earlier as your leadership philosophy. And in speaking to this audience, my first question is that a particular area of interest in yours, is growing the historically black colleges, and in what ways did you direct that message to them?
Well, yes, it is one of several areas of interest. I think that the historically black colleges and universities still face certain challenges. And I think that in a world that is more fast-paced than ever before, I think that some of their needs, some of the resources that are necessary are overlooked in this day and time. There was a time when you said historically black colleges and universities, you were speaking exclusively of African Americans. That could not be any more untrue today. What you have are a number of men and women from all walks of life and all ethnic groups who find that that university or that college to be in close proximity to them. Are they like the basis for the campus and the curriculum there? There are a lot of other reasons why they feel engaged. And so to ignore them is to ignore a part of our society that's seeking to grow and become better educated and contribute in one way or another in some sort of a meaningful job. And so I was delighted to have the opportunity to speak with them. I think that too many times people will try to read all the books at Barnes & Nobles and Borders on this thing called success. But at the end of the day, it really does boil down to having a vision where you are clear on what it is you want to accomplish and you see yourself in that picture. And you see what you're doing. And then when you start talking about your plan, it is a viable plan. It makes sense. You're not trying to skip across three steps to get from A to Z. You're going from A to B to C. And then there are people along the way who help you. They help you keep things sane and sober. But at the same time, these are people who will push you on and encourage you when you're thinking about throwing the towel in. So these relationships are very, very important. And I thought that the men and women there, some of them are younger men and women who have terrific career aspirations, and others were members of the faculties there. And I just thought that that was the right message for them.
Before we leave, I have a quote for you. It's a Forbes business quote. Try not to become a man of success, but rather a man of value. And that's from Albert Einstein. Can you give us about maybe 20 seconds of your thoughts on that?
Well, that's interesting because Albert Schweitzer said, in contrast, I would offer, that we're not known by our deeds, but we're known by the colors and textures that we bring to the life of others. And so at the end of the day, I would suggest it's not about me or you and the trophies we have on our mantle and the certificates on our wall. It's about whether or not we were a good steward. Did we help others succeed as we succeeded?
Were you a good servant leader?
Were we a good servant leader? So I would say that it's about not so much our success, it's about the colors and textures that we bring out in others, and in that, then we become a man or a woman of value.
Excellent. Thank you so much for appearing on the Leader Spot.
My pleasure.
We're speaking with the founder and CEO of Omniplex World Services Corporation, Julian Patterson. I'm Rebecca Blacksmith. Thanks to our sponsors, Market Point and Dennis Cole Architects, here on the Leader Spot.